If I told you that up to 95% of the chemical that's responsible for your happiness, your mood stability, and even the profound, like, reality-altering shifts of a psychedelic trip wasn't actually in your brain at all, but was just sitting quietly in your intestines, you'd probably think modern anatomy was completely upside down.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it sounds completely backward.
Right, because we've all been handed this deeply ingrained biological script. Whenever we talk about a sudden massive shift in human consciousness, whether that's, a moment of immense psychological clarity, or just waking up on the wrong side of the bed on a Tuesday, or even the intense mystical experience of taking a psychedelic medicine, we imagine the skull.
Yeah, we picture the cortex.
Exactly. You automatically visualize fireworks going off behind your eyes. It's a purely like head-first phenomenon where the brain is the CEO of reality and the body is just a meat suit taxiing the brain from room to room.
It is a phenomenal bias, really. I mean, we've been conditioned for centuries, arguably since Descartes, to view the mind as sitting in this pristine high tower of the skull, totally isolated from the messy plumbing of the body.
Right, the plumbing.
Yeah, we just treat the physical organs and especially the digestive tract as mere mechanical pipes, just tubes, really.
Yeah.
But modern neurobiology is actively dismantling that high tower. We're realizing that the body is not a passive vehicle at all. It is a highly active, constantly calculating participant in what we call consciousness.
And that profound shift in understanding is our central mission today, because for this deep dive, we are pulling apart a truly groundbreaking piece of source material.
It really is.
Yeah, it's this comprehensive article from the August 3, 2026 edition of the OTW Journal. It's titled Psychedelics and the Gut-Brain Axis, the Second Brain. And over the course of this conversation, we are going to completely reframe how you understand your own anatomy. We are going to explore the cutting-edge science of the gut-brain axis, dive deep into the biological reality behind the actual gut feeling, and explore why ignoring your belly means you are missing at least half the story of human consciousness, especially when we push into the frontier of psychedelic medicine.
It's an essential paradigm shift. I mean, to truly understand what happens to the mind during these intense pharmacological interventions, the science is literally demanding that we look downward.
Right.
You have to trace the biology from the cortex to the colon. And what we are finding is that ancient intuitive wisdom, that undeniable feeling in your stomach when something is very right or very wrong, is backed by incredibly dense, sophisticated neuroscience.
Okay, let's unpack this because the article drops a statistic right in the opening paragraphs that completely shatters the conventional wisdom.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It really is. When anyone discusses mood, depression, or psychedelics, the one neurochemical that dominates the conversation is serotonin. It is universally branded as the happy chemical. We naturally assume it is manufactured in the brain, floating around our synapses, dictating whether we feel joy or despair. But the source points out that 90 to 95% of all the serotonin in the human body is not in the brain.
No, it's not.
It is synthesized and stored in the gastrointestinal tract.
It completely upends the traditional narrative. I mean, if you weigh the serotonin in your body, the brain, which we treat as the absolute undisputed center of the serotonin universe, holds merely 5 to 10% of the total supply.
That is just wild to think about.
Right. The vast overwhelming majority of this immensely powerful, complex neurotransmitter is functioning right now in your bowels.
But why? I mean, what evolutionary reason could there possibly be for packing our digestive plumbing with the chemical that we associate with profound emotional states and higher consciousness?
Well, because serotonin is fundamentally an operating fluid for movement and communication. In the gut, serotonin's primary day-to-day job is orchestrating the immensely complex mechanics of digestion. When you eat, the physical stretch of your stomach and intestines triggers specialized cells in the gut lining. They're called enterochromaffin cells.
Enterochromaffin cells. Got it.
And they release massive amounts of serotonin. This serotonin binds to local receptors to trigger peristalsis, which is the rhythmic wave-like muscle contractions that move food through 30 feet of your digestive tract.
Wow, so it's doing the heavy lifting.
Exactly. It regulates secretion of digestive enzymes. It signals pain or nausea if you consume a toxin. It is the molecular workhorse of your entire digestive ecosystem.
And to manage all of that local signaling, you need processing power.
You do.
The article introduces the biological hardware running this operation, which is the enteric nervous system, or the ENS, and the numbers here are just mind-bending. It's a complex mesh of roughly 100 million neurons lining the GI tract, stretching all the way from the esophagus down to the rectum.
Yeah, and to really grasp the magnitude of 100 million neurons, consider your spinal cord.
But the spinal cord is the central data trunk line for your entire physical body, routing every sensation and motor command.
Right, it's the main cable.
Exactly. But your gut contains more neurons than that entire spinal cord.
Wait, really? More than the spinal cord?
Yes. It is a sprawling, wildly sophisticated neural network that is deeply embedded in the tissue of your organs.
It makes me think about how we design our houses, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine you build a state-of-the-art smart home, and you just assume the whole place is run by the massive supercomputer breaker box in the garage.
Right.
And that's your brain. You think every light switch, every thermostat has to report back to that garage to get permission to turn on.
Mm-hmm.
But then you pull back the drywall in the bathroom, and you realize there is an entirely separate, massive, incredibly sophisticated microprocessing grid embedded purely in the plumbing.
That's like a great way to picture it.
And this plumbing grid is making its own real-time decisions, managing the house's critical resources, adjusting pressure and temperature without ever needing to ask the garage for permission. That is the perfect analogy, because the defining characteristic of the enteric nervous system is its autonomy.
Autonomy?
Yeah. If you were to theoretically sever the primary nerve connection between the brain and the gut would just continue to function.
No way.
It would. Mm. It would continue to digest food, absorb nutrients, and manage waste. It does not require a top-down command to execute its primary functions. This sheer scale and operational independence is why neurogastroenterologists literally referred to this network as the second brain.
But this is where the terminology gets tricky, and I want to push on this a bit.
Sure.
If this hidden smart grid has 100 million neurons and is operating autonomously, is it literally thinking down there, like, if I eat a bad piece of fish, does my stomach have a conscious thought about it?
What's fascinating here is how this forces us to redefine what a thought actually is.
Okay.
Does your gut ponder philosophy? No.
Yeah.
It doesn't generate narrative, conscious thoughts, or internal monologues the way your cerebral cortex does.
So it's not worrying about my taxes.
Right, no tax worries in the colon. But if you define thinking biologically as the ability to sense a complex environment, process an array of variable data, and execute a coordinated, intelligent response, then absolutely, it is thinking.
So it's processing data just without an ego attached to it.
Precisely. It is measuring the mechanical stretch of the tissue. It is running chemical assays on the food you just swallowed to determine fat and protein content.
Wow.
Yeah, it is actively detecting the presence of foreign microbes, beneficial bacteria, or dangerous pathogens.
Oh.
It takes all of that incredibly dense data, crunches the numbers across its 100 million neurons, and releases serotonin and other neurotransmitters to adjust motility, dial up inflammation, or trigger a protective response.
That's incredible.
It really is a highly intelligent sensing organ that is constantly taking the temperature of your internal world.
Which brings us to the core mystery of this deep dive.
Right.
If this massive sensory organ is the body's primary reservoir for serotonin, and it uses serotonin to fundamentally run the internal engine of the body, we have to look at what happens when a powerful external substance designed to interact with that exact chemical enters the picture. Let's talk about psychedelics.
This is where the old paradigm truly begins to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Because our historical understanding of how these medicines interface with human biology has almost entirely ignored this massive neural network sitting in the belly.
The source outlines that classic psychedelics like psilocybin, you know, the active compound and magic mushrooms, work their magic fundamentally by acting as serotonin agonists.
Mm-hmm.
This means they mimic the shape of serotonin so perfectly that they can bind to serotonin receptors. Specifically, they lock into something called the 5-HT2A receptor.
Exactly.
And here's a simple, undeniable math from the article. If the gut is packed with 90 to 95% of the body's serotonin, it naturally follows that the gut is also incredibly densely populated with the exact receptors built to receive it.
Form inherently follows function in biology. You do not build a massive complex factory for a chemical without also building the necessary receiving docks.
Right, you need somewhere for it to land.
Exactly. The gastrointestinal tract is absolutely studded with 5-HT2A receptors.
So let's trace the physical journey. Let's look at the literal mechanical reality of what happens when someone ingests a psychedelic.
Okay.
Because we have this strange, almost magical thinking about oral medications. When someone eats a mushroom or swallows a psilocybin capsule, we picture the visual hallucinations, the psychological breakthroughs, the cosmic insights. And because all of those feel like head experiences, we subconsciously assume the medicine just like politely teleports from the mouth straight into the brain.
Yeah, we completely skip the journey.
We skip it entirely.
We completely ignore the physical transit. When you ingest oral psilocybin, it travels down the esophagus, lands in the highly acidic environment of the stomach, and physically passes through the duodenum and the entirety of the intestinal tract.
That's a long trip.
It is physically moving through 30 feet of tissue that is absolutely saturated with serotonin machinery.
The article uses a phrase that paints such a vivid picture here. It says the drug bathes the second brain in a signal it is exquisitely tuned to receive.
Bathes it.
Yeah. The psilocybin isn't bypassing the gut. It is literally washing over 100 million neurons that are biologically programmed to catch this exact chemical shape and fire off an immense response.
And this unavoidable physical reality is shifting the entire frontier of psychedelic science. I mean, it is biologically impossible for a broad serotonin agonist to drop directly into the largest concentration of serotonin receptors in the human body without causing a massive systemic event.
Right.
The gut doesn't just passively absorb it. The gut reacts profoundly.
But wait, let me play devil's advocate here for a second.
Go for it.
If the gut is just a giant serotonin factory and it releases serotonin when I eat a massive Thanksgiving dinner to move that food along,
yeah.
Why doesn't eating a huge meal trigger a psychedelic trip?
That's a very fair question.
Right. Like, if my gut is flooded with serotonin from eating turkey, why aren't the walls melting?
That is a brilliant distinction to make. It comes down to the difference between localized functional release and systemic receptor saturation.
Okay. Unpack that.
Well, when you eat a heavy meal, your inner chromatin cells release serotonin very precisely in highly localized bursts, purely to trigger the mechanical squeezing of the muscle right there in that specific spot.
So it's targeted.
Very tightly regulated. The serotonin is released, it does its job, and is immediately vacuumed back up by reuptake transporters.
Oh, I see.
But a psychedelic compound like psilocin, which is the metabolized version of psilocybin, doesn't play by those local rules.
It floods the zone.
It utterly floods the zone. It isn't released in tiny regulated bursts. It washes through the entire system simultaneously, binding tenaciously to 5-HT2A receptors everywhere all at once, and it resists being broken down as quickly as native serotonin. It creates a sustained, massive state of hyperactivation across the entire enteric nervous system that a normal meal could never organically trigger.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we accept this geographical reality that the medicine is physically detonating its largest chemical payload in the colon and the intestines, it completely upends how we study this.
It changes everything.
Whether you are reading up on the latest clinical trials at Johns Hopkins or studying ancient indigenous plant medicine traditions, the prevailing narrative has almost always been headfirst. We talk endlessly about neuroplasticity in the cortex. We talk about quieting the default mode network in the brain.
Right. The ego dissolution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if the body is the first point of contact, how does the brain, you know, locked away in the pitch black vault of the skull, actually find out that a psychedelic event has begun in the basement?
It requires a transmission cable.
Right.
And biologically, that transmission cable is one of the most incredible anatomical structures in the human body. The vagus nerve.
The superhighway of the gut-brain axis.
The literal biological wiring connecting the two brains. The term vagus actually comes from the Latin word for wandering, which is incredibly apt.
Wandering nerve?
Yeah. It is a massive, thick bundle of nerve fibers that originates way up in the brainstem, and it physically wanders down through the neck, passes through the chest, wiring directly into the heart and the lungs and branches extensively throughout the entire digestive tract.
So it touches everything.
Everything vital, yeah.
Yeah.
It is the direct physical link between the 100 million neurons in the belly and the 86 billion neurons in the head.
But the detail in the OOTW source that completely flipped my understanding of this nerve is the direction of the traffic.
All right.
Because again, our bias is top down. You naturally assume the brain is the general, sending marching orders down the vagus nerve to tell the heart to beat faster or the stomach to digest. But the article explicitly states that the vagus nerve is overwhelmingly a bottom-up road.
This is the critical piece of the puzzle. Upwards of 80% of the known fibers inside the vagus nerve are afferent. Yeah. In neurological terms, efferents mean sensory, meaning they carry information from the organs of the body up to the central processing unit in the brain. Only about 20% of the fibers are efferent, carrying commands from the brain down to the body.
So going back to our analogies, it is not the CEO sitting in a corner office barking orders down a loudspeaker to the factory floor.
Not at all.
It is actually the factory floor, the millions of sensory workers in the gut sending a constant high-speed stream of urgent memos, environmental status reports, and chemical alarms up to the CEO. The body is dictating reality to the brain.
You have to remember, the brain has no direct access to the outside world or even the inside world.
Right. It's just in a box.
It is trapped in a dark, silent bone box. It relies 100% on the sensory reports it receives from the body to construct a model of reality. And for the vast, complex internal world of your organs, the vagus nerve is the primary intelligence gatherer.
Okay. I love the elegance of this theory. I love the idea of the body reporting up. But I have to challenge the actual medical efficacy here.
Okay. Let's hear it.
We are talking about severe depression. We are talking about trauma and profound psychological states. Is there actual hard clinical proof that a physical signal starting in the intestines, traveling up this vagal cable, can actually alter brain chemistry enough to change something as stubborn and deeply rooted as a major depressive episode?
It's the most important question to ask, and the medical field already has the answer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We actually use this exact bottom-up mechanism in mainstream allopathic medicine right now.
Wow, okay.
The source highlights a massive piece of validating evidence. Electrical vagus nerve stimulation, or VNS, is already a fully FDA-approved medical treatment for treatment-resistant depression.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand this. We are treating depression in the brain by shocking a nerve in the neck or the chest?
That is exactly what happens. When a patient has severe depression that does not respond to multiple rounds of traditional psychiatric medications that typically target the brain's synapses directly, one of the last line interventions is surgical. A neurosurgeon implants a small device, kind of like a pacemaker, into the chest. This device sends regular, mild electrical pulses directly into the vagus nerve.
Into the nerve itself.
Right. That bottom-up electrical signal travels up the nerve, hits the brainstem, and cascades outward, fundamentally altering the activity in the mood centers of the brain, like the amygdala and the hippocampus.
That is wild.
It literally relieves clinical depression from the neck down, purely by feeding a new signal up the vagus nerve.
That is absolutely astonishing. It proves that the wire works in reverse.
It proves the wire is designed to regulate mood from the bottom up. And this brings us directly back to psychedelics.
Right, right.
The emerging, highly compelling hypothesis in modern psychedelic science is that a medicine like psilocybin is doing something remarkably similar to that electrical implant, but it is doing it chemically.
So instead of a battery in the chest, the trigger is the medicine in the gut.
Yes. The ingested psilocybin washes over that massive field of serotonin receptors in the enteric nervous system. That immense chemical activation creates an unprecedented electrical and signaling cascade.
Like a shockwave.
Exactly.
Oh.
That signal stimulates the local vagal nerve endings in the gut lining. A massive wave of highly novel information surges up the vagus nerve, hitting the brainstem and nudging the exact same emotional and mood-regulating networks in the brain that we already know vagal stimulation can successfully reach. As the article beautifully summarizes it, the belly rings the bell, and the brain hears it.
The belly rings the bell. It paints such a visceral picture of this bottom-up revolution. The gut takes the hit, and the brain feels the echo. Just when you think you have a clean map of this, okay, we have the 100 million neurons in the gut, we have the vagus nerve superhighway, we have the source introduces a massive, almost alien variable into the equation.
Oh, this is where it gets really strange.
Because the gut isn't just made of human tissue. It is densely populated by trillions of foreign entities. And according to this research, those entities might actually be holding the volume knob for how loud that bell can ring.
This is where we cross from fascinating anatomy into something that feels like science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot talk about the gut without talking about the microbiome.
Right. And I don't want to gloss over this. We've all heard the word microbiome tossed around in health podcasts or, you know, seen it on kombucha labels.
Sure.
But we aren't talking about simple digestion here. We are talking about an entire ecosystem of trillions of bacteria, fungi, viruses, and archaea living right now inside the dark, oxygen-deprived tube of your gastrointestinal tract.
Yes.
And the source reveals something truly staggering about these microbes. They actually help regulate how much serotonin your human tissue produces.
We have to stop viewing our gut bacteria as just passive hitchhikers or helpful little maids cleaning up our digestive waste. They are highly active, aggressively negotiating participants in human neurochemistry. They secrete metabolites, they release short-chain fatty acids, and they fundamentally alter the gene expression of the human cells they touch.
Altered gene expression.
Yes. And the researchers cited in the OOTW journal have documented that specific populations of these gut bacteria are actively associated with the density of 5-HT2A receptors in the human gut.
The exact same receptors that psychedelics use to initiate a trip.
Exactly. Let that sink in.
Mm-hmm.
The foreign bacteria living in your intestines are somehow involved in communicating with your human DNA, essentially telling your body how many landing pads it needs to build for a psychedelic medicine to dock with.
That is just, wow.
Researchers are carving out a whole new subfield for this highly specific intersection of psychedelics and gut bacteria, and they are calling it the psilocy biome.
The psilocy biome. So what does this all mean? Let's take this out of the lab and put it into the real world for you.
Okay.
Anyone who has been around psychedelic therapy or even just heard the anecdotal stories knows of the great mystery of dosing.
Oh, yeah, it's notorious.
You can take two people of similar height and weight, give them the exact same dose of psilocybin from the exact same batch of mushrooms. Person A has a profoundly mystical, life-altering, ego-dissolving experience.
Mm-hmm.
Person B takes the exact same physical amount and feels almost nothing. Maybe some mild anxiety, a few color shifts, but essentially no deep psychological movement.
It is arguably the biggest confounding variable in psychedelic clinical trials today.
Oh.
Why is the physiological and psychological response so wildly, unpredictably variable?
And historically, we always explain this away with psychology.
We do.
We talk about set and setting. We say, well, person A was really ready to surrender, or person B had too much subconscious resistance, or the music in the room wasn't right. We constantly look at external environmental factors or purely psychological defenses to explain why the trip was different.
Right.
We assume the physical hardware is exactly the same, so it must be a software issue. But this microbiome research suggests a massive hardware difference. It says your bacteria are actively shaping the physical parameters of the trip from the inside.
Because your microbiome is as entirely unique to you as your fingerprint. No two human beings on Earth have the exact same internal bacterial ecosystem.
Never.
If your unique, personalized bacterial population dictates the density of your serotonin receptors, it fundamentally dictates how strongly your physical hardware can even receive the chemical signal of the medicine.
So person B might not be psychologically resisting the experience at all. They might literally lack the bacterial profile required to build the receptors to catch the molecule.
Precisely. Your internal ecosystem is physically tuning the dial on the dose. It forces us to recognize that the human body and all the trillions of non-human life forms it contains is an active, negotiating participant in the psychedelic process.
It's a team effort.
It really is.
Mm.
It is not just an empty vessel waiting for the brain to have a spiritual epiphany.
You aren't just dosing yourself. You are dosing a complex ecosystem, a jungle of trillions of organisms, and they are collectively deciding how much of that chemical experience gets translated into electrical data and passed up the vagus nerve to your conscious mind. That is incredibly humbling.
It completely shatters the illusion of the individual self. And recognizing this active biological participation from the gut changes absolutely everything about how we view the physical reality of taking these medicines.
Yes, it really does.
Specifically, it forces a massive reframing of what we typically call the side effects.
Yeah.
Which brings us to arguably the most notoriously uncomfortable, feared part of any psychedelic experience.
Yes, the physical toll, the gastrointestinal distress. Anyone who has researched this space, read a trip report, or experienced it firsthand knows exactly what we are talking about.
Oh, definitely.
The intense vibrating butterflies in the stomach as the medicine starts to absorb, the churning, cramping, sometimes overwhelming nausea before a mushroom trip really peaks. And of course, when you move into traditional plant medicines like ayahuasca, you have the famous intense physical purging, the vomiting, the diarrhea. It is so central, so unavoidable in the experience that many indigenous Amazonian cultures don't even refer to ayahuasca as a hallucinogen. They literally just call it la purga, the purge.
In our modern, sanitized Western medical framework, We are highly trained to view nausea and vomiting as a biological failure.
Like a mistake.
We view it as a toxic response, or at best, an annoying, uncomfortable side effect that we should try to suppress with anti-nausea drugs like Zofran.
Mm-hmm.
A patient thinks, I took this medicine to heal my mind and confront my depression. Why is my stupid stomach cramping and getting in the way?
We see the belly as an obstacle. We feel like the body is interrupting the spiritual journey. But the OOTW article uses this emerging gut-brain science to completely validate and even celebrate these physical reactions.
It does.
The nausea is not a side effect. It is not an accident. It is the literal biological sound of the second brain responding to the chemical payload.
Think back to what we discussed about serotonin's day job. Its primary function in the gut is to regulate motility, to contract the muscles, and to initiate vomiting if a toxin is detected.
All right, it's doing its job.
Now, you drop a massive, overwhelming payload of the serotonin-mimicking compound directly into that system. Of course, the gut is going to react intensely.
Yeah.
The cramping, the churning, the purge. This is a 100 million neuron network lit up with unprecedented serotonin activity. It is the physical body registering the absolute undeniable reality of the medicine, often long before the visual hallucinations or the psychological effects even begin to flicker in the cerebral cortex.
The body knows first. The gut catches the wave before the brain even sees the water.
The body absolutely knows first. The belly is ringing the bell as loudly as it physically can, and sometimes that ringing manifests in intense nausea.
I love how the source connects this hard neurobiology back to ancient wisdom, because traditional indigenous cultures that have stewarded and used these medicines for thousands of years have never treated the purge as a side effect.
Never.
A curandero or a shaman doesn't hand you a bucket and apologize for the inconvenience.
Yeah, they don't.
They have always treated the physical purging as deeply meaningful and necessary release, a spiritual and physical cleansing. The ancient intuition was always that the body had to process and expel heaviness before the mind could elevate. And now, millennia later, cutting-edge gut-brain neuroscience is mapping the exact receptors and nerve pathways to give that ancient intuition a physiological spine. It proves them right on a hard biological level.
And we shouldn't limit this understanding purely to the extreme states of a psychedelic trip.
Yeah.
This biology applies directly to your everyday sober life.
Oh, for sure.
When you are facing a difficult decision and you tell a friend, I just have a gut feeling about this, or when you say you are sick to your stomach with dread before a terrifying public speaking event or a hard conversation, we have to stop treating those phrases as mere metaphors.
Right. We think it's just a colorful theater of speech.
It is literal, measurable neurobiology. Your enteric nervous system is a deeply sensitive feeling organ. Mm-hmm. It is perceiving threat, processing environmental cues through its 100 million neurons, and sending a massive wave of visceral sensation up the vagus nerve to your conscious mind.
Wow.
Your gut is literally feeling the dread. The nausea of anxiety is your second brain trying to warn you.
So if a gut is this sensitive, this highly perceptive, and this fundamentally intertwined with our emotional state, it perfectly explains why researchers are finding such a massive, undeniable correlation between physical gut health and chronic mental health conditions. We are moving beyond the acute, intense 3-hour window of a psychedelic trip and looking at everyday chronic human wellness.
This is exactly where the vast therapeutic potential of this science really starts to crystallize. The source highlights the profound, undeniable overlap between gastrointestinal distress and mental health disorders.
Mm-hmm.
To understand this, we have to talk about dysbiosis.
Let's define dysbiosis clearly for you. That's essentially when the complex ecosystem in your gut, your unique microbiome, gets thrown completely out of balance.
Right.
The beneficial bacteria are depleted, pathogenic or inflammatory bacteria take over, and the whole environment becomes hostile.
Correct. And when you have a chronically disrupted gut, whether from poor diet, chronic stress, or heavy antibiotic use, that dysbiosis damages the mucosal lining of the intestines.
Right, just bad.
Very bad. It drives a state of constant, low-grade systemic inflammation throughout the entire body. The immune system becomes constantly agitated, releasing inflammatory cytokines. And modern psychiatry and medicine have now firmly, undeniably linked this kind of systemic neuroinflammation to clinical depression.
So it's a vicious chain reaction. A physically sick, imbalanced gut leads to a leaky, inflamed body, which sends inflammatory distress signals up to the brain, which manifests as a depressed, anxious mind.
Exactly. Depression is increasingly being viewed not just as a chemical imbalance in the brain, but as a symptom of a body on fire.
A body on fire.
And the telling clue here, as the source heavily emphasizes, is that profound disturbances in gut-brain signaling, chronic inflammation, inflammation, and severe dysbiosis show up incredibly consistently in the exact same psychiatric conditions that psilocybin and other psychedelics are currently being fast-tracked to treat.
Which conditions specifically?
We are talking about major depressive disorder, severe generalized anxiety, chronic substance addiction, and complex eating disorders like anorexia nervosa.
Wow.
Historically, we treated all of these as purely brain-based psychiatric disorders, but they are all intimately characterized by profound disturbances in the gut-brain axis, severe gastrointestinal comorbidities, and disrupted microbiomes.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it changes the entire target of the therapy. We spent the last decade assuming psychedelics work their magic purely by shaking the snow globe of the brain.
Right, the snow globe effect.
We talk about how they disrupt rigid, depressive thought loops and promote neuroplasticity in the cortex. But if these powerful medicines are physically initiating their journey by massively binding to gut serotonin receptors, they might actually be doing critical biological repair work in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
They might be physically calming that systemic inflammatory signaling at the very source of the fire.
They might literally be rebooting the enteric nervous system. By flooding the gut with this novel signal, they could be retuning the vagal conversation between the belly and the brain, shifting the nervous system out of a chronic, inflamed fight-or-flight state, and resetting the physical hardware.
That makes so much sense.
It suggests that these medicines may heal the mind fundamentally by way of healing the physical body that carries it. It elevates the psychedelic experience from a purely psychological event to a true whole-system biological reset.
I love that concept of a whole system reset, but I want to pause here and pump the brakes for a second. Because we need to be incredibly rigorous about scientific accuracy based strictly on what the OOTW source is telling us. We've laid out some massive concepts.
Right.
We've established that 90 to 95% of serotonin is manufactured in the gut. We've established that oral psychedelics bathe the gut in a serotonin-like chemical signal.
Right.
Does this mean that during a mushroom trip, all that native serotonin manufactured in my intestines suddenly rushes up through my bloodstream and physically floods into my brain synapses?
Definitively, unequivocally, no.
Yeah.
And this is a crucial biological caveat that the source makes sure to heavily emphasize because it's a very common misunderstanding.
Yeah, it's easy to assume that.
The 90 to 95% figure is completely real, but gut serotonin and brain serotonin are largely segregated, separate pools of chemistry.
They don't physically mix.
They do not mix.
Mm.
Nature has built a highly selective physiological fortress called the blood-brain barrier.
Ah, the barrier.
Its entire evolutionary purpose is to protect the delicate, highly calibrated environment of the brain from chaotic fluctuations of chemicals in the body's bloodstream. The serotonin that is naturally manufactured in your gut is a molecule that is physically too large and biochemically prevented from crossing that barrier. The serotonin in your gut stays in your gut, and the brain has to manufacture its own small private supply.
Okay, so if the physical molecule of serotonin can't cross the barrier, how does the connection actually work? How does the brain know what the gut is experiencing if the chemical itself is blocked at the gate?
The connection works entirely via signaling. And this is exactly why the vagus nerve is the hero of this story.
The superhighway.
The chemical interaction. The psilocybin binding to the receptors, the serotonin release, happens physically in the gut.
Mm-hmm.
But the information about that massive chemical event is translated into an electrical and sensory signal that races up the vagus nerve.
I see.
It is the difference between mailing a physical package and sending an email. The brain receives the urgent message and reacts accordingly without the physical serotonin molecule ever having to cross the blood-brain barrier. It's an information superhighway, not a chemical pipeline.
That is a vital distinction. It is a sensory signaling relay, not a physical chemical flooding. And while we are clarifying things, we also have to honestly address the limits of where the science is right now, today, in 2026.
Absolutely. The OOTW Journal is very intellectually honest about this. Much of this incredibly exciting, paradigm-shifting framework is still in the hypothesis stage. It is the bleeding edge of neuroscience.
Right.
We know the anatomy is definitively real. We know the vagus nerve operates bottom up. We know the receptors are there. But proving the exact granular mechanisms of the psilocybiome in living humans.
That's the hard part.
Yeah. Proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that the gut action is the primary causal driver of the psychological benefit rather than just a contributing factor, that is incredibly difficult. Currently, much of the specific mechanism is supported by basic biology, in vitro studies, and animal models.
Right. We can map these exact neural pathways, knock out specific bacteria, and sever vagus nerves in mice to prove how it works, but it's infinitely harder to track those precise real-time chemical cascades in a living human being during a psychedelic experience.
Exactly. We do not yet have perfectly clean, large-scale human causal trials proving every single step of this chain reaction from colon to cortex. We are mapping a new frontier, which means there are still dark spots on the map.
And as with every single deep dive we do on this subject, it is absolutely paramount to remember that these powerful chemical interventions are not a magic bullet, and they are definitively not for everyone.
Definitely not.
The source explicitly warns about the real biological risks. Because these medicines act so profoundly on serotonin systems, both in the gut and the brain, they are considered highly risky for individuals with a personal or family history of psychosis, schizophrenia, or bipolar disorder.
Extremely risky.
Furthermore, they can be incredibly dangerous for people currently taking SSRI antidepressants. Mixing a massive serotonin agonist with a medication designed to prevent serotonin reuptake can lead to serotonin syndrome, which is a severe, potentially life-threatening physical crisis.
Tinkering with the fundamental operating fluids of human consciousness requires immense respect, rigorous clinical caution, and a deep understanding of the biology involved. These are powerful tools, not toys.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's look back at the sheer scale of the journey we've just mapped out.
It's been quite a trip.
It has. We started by dismantling the idea that your head runs the show, revealing that your belly houses an autonomous second brain of 100 million neurons. We tracked how a psychedelic medicine travels physically through the digestive tract, actively bathing a massive concentration of serotonin receptors.
Mm-hmm.
We followed the resulting electrical signal up the vagus nerve superhighway, an urgent memo sent from the sensory factory floor up to the isolated CEO in the skull. We explored how your entirely unique psilocybiome, your personal, highly customized ecosystem of bacteria, might be actively tuning the dial on your receptor density and shaping the dose. And finally, we reframed the physical discomfort, the notorious purge, not as an annoying side effect, but as the body actively validating the medicine and beginning the physical process of healing.
When you look at all those biological realities stacked together, the old, entrenched picture of a psychedelic experience, or frankly, even just the daily reality of human mood and emotion as a purely head phenomenon, it's completely incomplete.
Yeah.
You simply cannot separate the mind from the biological ecosystem it rests upon.
It truly is a whole system event.
It is. And this raises an incredibly important question, something for you to mull over after we sign off today.
Let's hear it.
We now know that our gut microbes actively dictate the density of our serotonin receptors. And we know that those very same receptors fundamentally shape our physical and psychological response to these powerful mind-altering medicines. So could the future of mental health care require a total paradigm shift?
Wow.
Before we ever attempt to treat the trauma in our minds, will psychiatry first require us to carefully, intentionally cultivate the bacterial soil in our guts? Are we in fact farming our own consciousness?
Farming our own consciousness, that is an incredible, profound thought to leave on. The next time you feel a sudden, inexplicable shift in your mood, or you find yourself anticipating a massive change and feel that undeniable twist in your stomach, don't just look for the fireworks in your head. Pay deep attention to the intelligent rumbling in your belly. The second brain might just be lighting the fuse. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, always trust your gut, and keep exploring the incredible systems operating just beneath the surface. We'll catch you next time.